The court will now call Keith D. Hamilton versus the State of Texas. Mr. Ronald Couch will argue for the appellant. Mr. C. James Gibson will argue for the state.
Opposing counsel. My name is Ron Couch. I was appointed in this case by the court, I think at the end of last year, to handle Mr. Hamilton's appeal. This is a bait car case. The same bait car case that you see on television called bait. At the end of, I think, 2010, the Holbrook Police Department instituted their bait car program by providing a 2005 Chevrolet Suburban, which was placed in South Fort Worth around I-35, I believe, in a high crime area. The vehicle was left running, the door was open, the vehicle was running, the door open, and the police left it there as a bait car. In addition to leaving it open and running, the police also provided a cold beer on the console to make it really enticing for someone to come and take the vehicle. Mr. Hamilton is alleged to have been that person who took the vehicle. It was taken around the area of I-35 in South Fort Worth. It went for a distance, and then they activated the kill switch, which you see on TV also, which stopped the car. They tried to find a safe place to do that, and there was no incident when the car was stopped. Mr. Hamilton elected to go to trial on this case for a jury. The case was tried at the end of last year. Mr. Hamilton did not testify. It was a rather short trial. At the conclusion of the trial, the jury convicted Mr. Hamilton of the offense of unlawful appropriation of a value of $1,500 to $20,000. Before the case went to the jury, Mr. Hamilton's trial counsel asked the court to instruct the jury to include an entrapment defense. They're feeling that Mr. Hamilton was enticed into this vehicle because of the manner in which it was left, and especially the cold beer as an additional enticement for him to take it. The trial court denied the motion for an entrapment defense, and so the jury was never instructed on the issue of entrapment. Entrapment basically means police create a situation for a person to commit a crime which they otherwise wouldn't have done. Now,
Mr. Kraft, why don't we just get to the point? The elephant in the room, of course, is what does a beer have to do with stealing a car? If it was open, if it was a woman's purse, if it was a $100 bill, if it was a credit card, if it's a six-pack sitting on there, he can grab it and go. And I think everybody's having trouble, as pointed out by the state, of course, which you're well aware, connecting the fact that there's a beer sitting in the car has anything to do with him grabbing the car and running with it.
Well, our position is that is there a limit to the amount of enticement the state provides? Is there a limit?
Well, like, for example, the key was in the car and it was running.
Yes.
But that wasn't the case here, correct?
No, I believe the door was open and it was left running.
Okay. What I'm saying is that that sounds like more of an enticement to argue than there's a cold beer in the concept.
Well, I mean, I guess the primary enticement would be the fact that the vehicle is open and running.
Okay.
In addition, the police on their own decided to provide the beer and some scattered beer cans to make it, I believe, look like a normal situation. The problem we have is, okay, how about they included playing a Thriller CD from Michael Jackson and a cigar.
Does that help stealing the car? That's my trouble.
We believe, and our position is, that that's an additional unreasonable inducement for someone, an ordinary person, who would be overcome by all those extra attractions in the vehicle.
I mean, just kind of seems to me that it allows him to get a DWI in addition to that. Do you really want that? Is that really a help here?
Well, I don't think the person would be thinking that far in advance.
That's fair enough.
Our position, and there's some case law we cited in the brief, there is another case called Ramos v. State, and where the court said, we have reviewed the record and do not find any evidence that Rossett or Bazan and Gonzalez, the informants, offered appellant inordinate sums of money or employed other methods of persuasion that are likely to cause the person to commit an offense that he would not otherwise commit. So our position is that the beer is an unreasonable inducement and it should have been permitted. Therefore, the court should have instructed the jury to consider the entrapment defense.
So a beer would overcome an ordinary person's resistance to committing a crime, to stealing a vehicle. That's your position?
Yes. If the enticement was too much for the ordinary person to resist. The issue is, where does that end?
Well, that's not really the issue, because we have a set of facts in this case, and we have to decide this case on that set of facts. It's not as if there was a bag full of money, $1 million, sitting there saying, take me, take me, take me. That's not it. We have one beer, and it's the case law is, if it just provides someone an opportunity to commit a crime, it's not entrapment. It has to overcome an ordinary person's
resolve
to not commit a crime.
I agree with our position is that that was beyond the pale of enticing someone to take the vehicle. Can I go and address the second point? Now, what happened in this case was Mr. Hamilton was convicted. Mr. Hamilton had a pretty extensive criminal history, and therefore the case, which should have been a state jail felony carrying a range of 6 months to 2 years, was enhanced twice to a second degree felony level, so he was looking at 2 to 20 years. Mr. Hamilton has, as all defendants, had the choice of going to the jury for punishment or going to the court for punishment. And Mr. Hamilton decided to go to the court for punishment instead of the jury. Had he elected the jury, they would have made the decision as to how many years he would have spent in penitentiary. Unfortunately, the trial court assessed 20 years on Mr. Hamilton's case, which was the maximum allowed by law. He did have an extensive record, and the court addressed that in the record, but the court also stated that the court had no choice but to assess a 20-year sentence. Now that's our second point that we object to, that the court assess 20 years when the court could have assessed somewhere between 2 and 20. When we pick jurors in criminal cases, one of the questions we ask them is, can you consider the full range of punishment of whatever it is, say 5 to 99 or 2 to 10, and they have to say, yes, I can consider the full range of punishment. Otherwise, they're disqualified as a juror for cause. So our position in this case is that the judge had the ability to assess a 2 to 20-year case, but decided and put it in the record that she had no choice but to do it. And we think that was improper for the court to make that call based upon the facts of the case. As I pointed out in my brief, had Mr. Hamilton had no criminal history, his maximum exposure would have been 2 years in the state jail. since he got 10 times that. And we believe that was unreasonable for the court to assess that contract. Therefore, we'd ask the court to set aside the conviction and or set a punishment again. We have a punishment hearing. We don't try the case over. We go back and just do the punishment hearing. But we're also asking that. Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court. Mr. Couch has done a fine job of going over the facts of this case and the bait car program, which is kind of interesting. I want to take a more global look at the entrapment statute, which many of our defenses are actually written in the statute, in the penal code in this case. Entrapment is a defense to prosecution if the accused engaged in the conduct charged because he was induced to do so by a law enforcement agent using persuasion or other means likely to cause persons to commit the offense. Now, conduct merely affording a person an opportunity to commit an offense does not constitute entrapment. Now, I'll get to that in a minute, but before England versus State in 1994, most courts seem to think that this was a purely objective test. And that case, of course, changed it and made clear. But when the statute says, because the defendant was induced to engage in conduct by a law enforcement officer, what that means is, was he actually induced? Was that actual defendant induced? And then the second part is an objective test. Is this the kind of conduct by the policeman that would render an ordinary person who normally wouldn't commit a crime more likely to do so? So with that subjective component, the defendant has to produce evidence that he committed the offense because he was induced to do so. And I think that one of the focuses of disagreement that we have in this case is that appellant seems to concentrate on a purely kind of theoretical examination of the officer's conduct. In other words, What was going on in his mind is what he did, that's something that would induce somebody else to steal the car. And the problem with this case is that there's just no evidence that appellant himself was actually induced by the beer to take the car. He didn't testify, and that's going to be a big stumbling block to proving any evidence of inducement. That testimony may not be absolutely necessary, but it's certainly pretty close to necessary, but even so, we don't have any evidence here. And the further we get from what's in his mind, I think the closer we get to just kind of back to a pure objective test, which is a mistake. But getting to the objective part of it, there's really not any evidence that the methods used by the Fort Worth police, and let's just assume for the sake of argument that they're placing the beer there to make the car more attractive, which I don't believe happened. The bait car program is just not, it's not the kind of situation that would induce an otherwise law-abiding citizen to steal a car. And this court's already held that in Adams and in Keaton. Adams is not exactly an entrapment case, but it was, but it went into that, whether the bait car program would constitute entrapment.
Let me be the devil's advocate again. Other than to enhance the entrapment value of the vehicle, what would be the purpose of putting the beer there?
To make the car look like it was just a junky car that somebody left with the keys in. It wasn't some sort of pristine bait car, I suppose. Not the bait cars
are a bait car known among the criminal element to be pristine?
I have no idea, Your Honor. But for whatever reason, the police in this case testified that part of their modus operandi is to put some personal items, some sort of garbage type things in the car, and in this case there was at least a case of beer, I don't know if it was filled with beer or not, and a can of beer on the console. Although the evidence is a little bit confusing on the score, but I'll assume that it's as attractive as it could possibly be. But but it was sitting there on the console, and I think according to the testimony, I don't think the purpose of it was to induce the defendant, but I'll gladly stand here and say that even if it was, it's still, let's talk about the opportunity to commit the crime. The bait card program is a textbook example of giving a criminal the opportunity to commit a crime. The car is there, it's running, it's got the keys in it, it's saying, come steal me. Whether there's beer in there or not, let's say the beer was part of that, that's just another opportunity. And this is, I guess, kind of the position I'm staking out, is that it doesn't matter if you stack opportunity on opportunity on opportunity, whether it's a nice cold beer in the car, or there are diamonds welded in this steering wheel. Or another way would just be to simply say, well, why try to reduce somebody with a 6 or 7 year old SUV? Why not make it a Ferrari or something with a key in the car? Is the simple fact that it's a very nice item to steal, is that something that we would want to say as a matter of laws of inducement? I don't see how that could work in our system, where we actually allow police to be creative in how they tackle these situations. But, so, whether there was, so again, and like you pointed out just before, I mean, if the beer was so great, you could have just taken it and left the car alone. But as I said, if no matter how many opportunities there are, or enticements, I'm not going to say inducements, but enticements in the car that make the car more attractive, it just can never rise to the level of entrapment. And in this case, certainly not for the purposes of getting instruction.
So that bottom line, the state's position is, it doesn't matter what you do with the car, it can't constitute entrapment.
It's hard for me to imagine a situation where...
Okay, yes, I understand. That's your position. Okay.
Absolutely. Moving on to the second point of error, I just have a couple of points to make about that. Yes, the defendant got 20 years. I did want to point out that not only did he have an extensive criminal history, but at least the last, I think, four convictions were for unauthorized use of a vehicle. So obviously this is, it almost looks like that's how he's making his living. And as the prosecutor pointed out in the trial, whatever drug problem the appellant had before, he seems to have cleared up. So it's not as if he's stealing cars and trying to deal with a drug problem at the same time, or trying to, I guess, support his drug addiction. So he doesn't have that kind of like bear around sympathy. Another focus of the appellant's complaint is that he's getting about 10 times the maximum for an unenhanced version of his crime. Well, obviously, from our point of view, that way of thinking is pretty much eviscerates the enhancement scheme. And if we're going to hold defendants accountable for their past actions through an enhancement scheme or through punishment that's based on past convictions, then we have to be able to consider the whole range. And in this case, the judge did so, and I don't think that it was of constitutional significance. That the appellant's rights weren't violated in this regard. And with those two arguments, the state prays that the judgment of the trial court be affirmed. Thank you very much.
I just want to explain the enhancement situation in this case. The first enhancement would have been to a third degree felony, 2 to 10 years. But this fellow was enhanced twice, so his range was 2 to 20. That's how we got to that point. In the entrapment issue, there's a case called Coronado versus the United States, an old case, 1959, Fifth Circuit case from New Orleans. It's part of the case says entrapment is a jury question unless evidence is so clear and convincing that the matter can be passed by the court as a matter of law. That's our issue. We're saying there is an issue. We think there's an issue. Therefore, the jury should have been allowed. allowed to struggle with whether or not he was entrapped.
How do you think the evidence raised the subjective component of entrapment that he, in fact, was induced?
Well, he didn't testify, so the only way that we say that was done was through cross-examination of the police by his trial counsel, who brought up the fact that of the setting of the vehicle, how they set it up, they left it running, they left the door open, and they decided to put the beer in there. And it's clear that the police officers came up with the idea of putting the beer in. So that's the only way the issue could be raised, because he didn't testify. And he has a right not to testify, but I guess the core issue is, yes, we understand that the bait car program is not entrapment, but our issue is the way it is conducted could be improper. And we're saying the enticements that were in this case were improper, and therefore the jury should have been allowed to argue this issue among themselves rather than the trial.
Thank you, Mr. Couch. Thank you, Mr. Gibson. We appreciate your arguments here today. We appreciate you coming out to Aledo High School today, as well as you, Ms. Dahomey, and Mr. Burns. That concludes the cases on our docket for today. Counsel, you are free to go about your business, and you can take